Episode 102, the one about the takeover.
Changes. Turn and face the strange. Changes. Don't want to be a richer man.
Alright, welcome to the State of Games. I'm Dice Hate Me.
I'm Get Louder.
And I'm JJS1.
And we're a podcast all about anything and everything geeky and board and card games. We'd like to welcome you to episode 102, or as we like to call it, the What About the Takeover. Dun dun dun!
The aliens are attacking!
So, some of you may who follow the Dice Hate Me Twitter account may have seen me post something a couple of weeks ago that stated that Jessica was going to take over the State of Games podcast.
Much to her surprise.
Much to her surprise.
Exactly.
So, we know this episode's titled The Takeover, but it's a little bit of an exaggeration. We have decided to make some changes to the show and how I run the podcast, but they're not super drastic, except for getting rid of TC.
Yeah, he's not on the show.
Yeah.
That was my first duty, was to fire TC.
She totally just said, get out, GTFO, we don't need you anymore.
Yeah, I mean, with the four of us, it was just like we had the ego of six, and now with TC gone, we have the ego of two people.
Plus, he was always cheating on the podcast. So
always.
He always cheated. That is true. No, we have not ejected TC from the podcast. In all fairness and openness and transparency, we have recorded this before.
What?
Yes. In some alternate dimension, we recorded an entire podcast with TC, and the audio was all screwed up.
I don't remember this.
Yeah, you probably wiped it from your memory because it was on your system.
Must have been drunk. Don't recall.
So one of the changes we're going to be making to the podcast is we're going to make sure we have reliable audio. So that's going to be super awesome.
Here's a tip for all you kids out there. Next time you record a podcast, make sure you wear headphones.
Yeah.
Don't listen to the spy of the group and say, we don't need headphones. We're good.
I didn't say we didn't need headphones. I just didn't think about it. Anyway, these things happen. This is the labor of love that we go through to produce this podcast for y'all. Unfortunately, it means that we had to record on a night when TC was not available. And to keep us on schedule, we want to just keep moving. So TC said, go right ahead. So whenever there's a TC moment, we might mention something. I'll mention something, or I'll, you know, say something bombastic, and then that'll be perfect.
I'll just imitate TC. So good.
So good. So did you run your hands through your hair?
Of course. I can't say that without doing it.
Flick your hair over your shoulder.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
It's involuntary. It's like if someone yawns, you have to yawn back. If I say so good, I have to run my fingers through my hair. Like I just did it again.
So good. So everybody who might be going to Unpub, we'll have more about that later, but Unpub 6, hey, come up to TC and say so good. Run your hands through your hairs. He'll do it back.
Yep.
It's like a knee-jerk response for him now. It's like Pavlovian. So anyway, we are going to be making some changes to the podcast, most notably with Jessica taking over, but we'll be getting into that a little bit later during the meat of the podcast. But first, let's talk about what we've been doing in our board gaming lives. Jessica, why don't you start? What have you been up to?
Well, I've been playing a lot of games since we last spoke for the last episode, but a lot of the games that I have been playing are ones that we played at PresCon, because I ended up buying a lot of those games. But one new game that I picked up was called Raptor, which is designed by the Brunos, Bruno Faduti and Bruno Cathala.
That means it's probably going to be pretty good.
Yeah, it's published by Matigo, and it's a two-player only game with a modular board where one person plays as a mama raptor and her five babies, and the other player plays as a group of scientists. So the goal of the scientist is to knock out and capture three of the babies, or to knock out the mama by shooting her with a sedative five times. And the goal of the person playing as the raptors is to escape three of the babies off the game board, or to eat all of the scientists on the board.
Which sounds awesome.
And this is done with some card play. Each person has their own unique group of cards. So it's a pretty quick game. Each player has their own stash of minis, you know, little baby raptors and the big mama raptor.
It's asymmetric, right?
Yes, it's absolutely asymmetric.
Okay, cool.
Please tell me there's a card or an ability that's called Clever Girl.
They don't have names. There's just iconography on them.
It should missed totally. I know, totally missed opportunity.
But one, I guess one card would be that. It's where you play the card, and if you get to take the action on the card, then basically you just remove the Mama Raptor off the board, and then the other player gets to do their number of actions that they're allowed. And then the Mama Raptor gets to come back on the board anywhere. It's because she kind of ran off into the foliage and is hiding and spying, kind of you know, sneaking up on the scientists. And then with that one, you get to see the next card that the person chose to play. So you can pick whichever card you want to play to kind of counteract that. So
cool. Did you find that one side was easier or stronger to play?
Well, the first couple of times I played, yes. It was a little bit easier for the Raptors to complete their goals because the Mama Raptor can move. For one action, she can move as many spaces as she wants in a straight line, whereas the baby raptors and then the scientists can only move one space each time. So she could kind of come up real quick and eat the scientists and everything. But it really depends on how you play the cards, because what you do is it's simultaneous card selection, and then when you flip the cards over, whoever has the lower valued card gets to do whatever action is depicted by the card. And then the other player, the one that played the higher valued card, gets a number of different actions that's equal to the difference between the cards. So if you play it right and play the number 9 card, and then the other person played a 1, then you get 8 actions. Oh. So it depends on that. And then also, it's 9 cards, and you keep a hand of 3, so it just depends on what valued cards you have in your hand. And that screwed me up one game where it didn't matter what card I played, I was going to lose right then. So, but yeah, it's a nice, quick, fun little game.
It sounds cool, and the minis look cool too. I love like the scientists that are running for their lives, and there's like somebody with a trank gun and somebody with binoculars, and
yeah, it's pretty cool. And the little baby raptors are so cute.
Yeah, but see, this is where I haven't played it, but this is where my issue with the game lies: the miniatures.
Oh, you're such a nerd.
I am such a nerd, but the mother raptor would not at all be as big as she is in the game, because the tallest raptor was the Montana raptor discovered by Robert Packer in Montana. And, or was it Dakota? No, it was Montana.
Montana. Duh.
And that stood at maximum height of 5 feet. So even like the raptors in Jurassic Park are highly exaggerated in their size. They'd actually be the size represented via scale of the baby raptor miniatures at a full adult.
So yeah, Daryl, you're a super uber dinosaur nerd, but this game looks fun. So I'd like to try it, especially by the Brunos.
Yeah.
I like asymmetrical two-player games. They're kind of fun. It's hard for me to get them to the table unless it's like a con experience late at night and everybody's going to bed. But hey, it's okay. So I'm going to step in for TC.
So good.
So good. No, not so good. He had a whole rambling explanation of A Study in Emerald. And this is the second edition, I think he said he played. They made a lot of changes. Yeah, apparently they made a lot of changes and actually sped the game up. The original game was like 90 plus minutes, and this one lasts like under an hour, even 30 minutes, he said sometimes. So whatever changes they made, they seem to be drastic. So A Study in Emerald is essentially it's based on a Neil Gaiman story, short story. Or story, and it's basically the old ones have taken over. The great old ones have taken over, and so they're ruling the earth. But there's an underground movement to take them over, or sow anarchy and overthrow them. And so it's basically you're two different factions, and nobody really knows what faction you're serving. And basically, I'm going to sum up. I'm doing a better job of summarizing it than TC, and I haven't even played it, but. That what he said was he gave it a 6 on the BGG scale. So essentially, he was like, might be able to play it again. I don't know. It's something that I actually remember when they first kickstarted the first edition, and it's something that I wanted to check out, obviously, because I'm a big Cthulhu fan. But it has like bidding and area control and all kinds of stuff going on in it. It sounds pretty fascinating to me, and it's set in, you know, Victorian era Sherlock Holmes and stuff.
It's odd because you said edition 1 I guess played like over 2 hours long.
Yeah, it's supposed to be super long. The second edition
played in 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's insane that they were.
Yeah.
And on BGG, the first edition is ranked at 7.3, which is crazy.
Well, it makes you wonder, like, because, you know, there's the whole theory that a shorter game time usually equals a better game. But I mean, that's not always the case.
It's not always the case.
Alien Frontiers, Arkham Horror, Eldritch Horror. Those are longer games, and people like them because they're meaty and they're big. Firefly.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you have a first edition game that takes that long, and your second edition you trimmed out 3/4 of the game time, it just makes me wonder, like, what was wrong with the first edition that you couldn't fix it before that, and then does it really play better? Because now, for me, I want to play both versions. I've never played the game. It has been something on my watch list, but I want to play both versions to see which one I like better.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to get both versions out and try them back to back and kind of see what the changes were that were in there. He said one game that they played was like 15 minutes. I'm like, yeah. That sounds almost broken. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, sure, it's not broken, but, you know, it's just crazy to go from a 2+ hour game to like, oh, it can be over in 15 minutes. I'm just wondering how fulfilling those 15 minutes are. I mean, according to TC and his madness about it, you know, he ranked it a 6, which is not horrible. I mean, it's like, you know, but, you know, for a TC game, a 6 is like, I'll play it if somebody asks me, but he's not going to go out of his way.
You can get the first edition on Amazon right now, brand new, for $194.
Only $194?
Only $194. But yeah, the first edition says 90-minute play time. The second edition says 60.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
But TC did 15 and 30 minutes, and I believe he said he played it with 5 players, so...
Yeah, he did, yeah. So he's playing pretty big. So basically, I'm just going to throw it out there because, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, listener interaction. If anyone out there listening right now has played both versions or knows the differences or what's been stripped out, let us know. And we'll talk about it on the podcast because I'm fascinated.
Yeah, same.
So, well, I guess I'll talk about what I've been up to. And I went to New Jersey for the Cardboard Edison judging for their awards. This was Chris and Suzanne Zinsley. And the Cardboard Edison Awards this year, they had a ton of different entries thrown in, and then they enlisted the help of myself and several other industry reviewers, insiders, publishers, designers, all kinds of people to watch the video pitches and read the rules and vote on what they felt like seemed to have the most promise and what was most engaging. Narrowed it down to a few finalists and had them send prototypes to Chris and Suzanne. And then they invited people to come up to New Jersey to their house to hang out. And I decided I was going to go do it. So it was a lot of fun. We had, you know, they put a lot of us up. They fed us the entire time. The hospitality was amazing. We were able to play so many games. And what was impressive about the game selection was the fact that none of us really played a bad game that whole weekend. It was very impressive that the caliber of games, even if some of the games were a little clunky in places, the core of it, we felt like they were all had a lot of, you know, worthwhile diamond in the rough type of things. And we gave a lot of good feedback. So these games are going to get stronger. And it wouldn't surprise me that several of them might get picked up. One's already been signed, but it was a blast. I'm looking forward to next year. I'm hoping that they'll invite me to do it again. And, I guess I should talk about the actual awards, the overall winner. It was Blood of an Englishman from Dan Kassar, who entered Blood of the Englishman in the first Rabbit contest that we had a couple of years ago. And I remember playing it and seeing a couple other judges play it when it was here. And it always got interesting reaction because it's basically based on Jack and the Beanstalk. And one side plays Jack. He's trying to manipulate these cards. It's a small card game. Manipulate these cards in such a way that he can climb the beanstalks and grab all the goodies from the giant. And the giant's trying to form like fee-fi-fo-fum in a row to pretty much put an end to Jack. So it's asymmetrical play. It's whimsical, but the actual strength of the strategy behind the game is a lot stronger than you'd expect from a game based on a fairy tale. So it's a surprise. It's a pleasant surprise. But it took the overall, you know, grand prize winning spot, but it was really close with like 3 or 4 other entries. They were all like very, very slim points spread between them. I had a great time, and I'm looking forward to seeing the development of some of these games that we played while we were there. So that's what I was up to.
What do the winners get? They win bragging rights?
Bragging rights,
they get a trophy.
Yeah, I have a feeling next year, I mean, I'm sure they'll do this again, but next year there's probably going to be something. Maybe a sponsored award or something like that. I mean, the one thing is this for sure is that there, so many people came and checked them out that they're getting good word of mouth. They're also getting great feedback. So that was one of the benefits of becoming a finalist. You're getting feedback from all the judges. So because we fill out an online survey, we give them a ranking, but we also all submitted comments. And so the designs will only get stronger and stronger from that. So that's a big benefit of doing it. But next year, I mean, I don't know exactly what they have planned for it. I think we're going to have a different judging structure at the end than we did at the beginning, just because we asked for, I don't know, a few more parameters so that we could make the final decision easier, I guess, so to speak, with the point spread, but also because we just wanted to have a higher variance of our rating system, because a lot of them all come out kind of in the middle, because, you know, like they'd score 4 in one thing, 2 in another, 5 in this, you know, it was just all over the board. So anyway, it was a ton of fun. I'm looking forward to seeing exactly how the finalists that we played, the games of the finalists that we played are going to make it to, you know, a published state. There was only one game that I played the entire weekend that made me mad. But
why did it make you mad?
It was because it was frustrating. We played, it was a 3-player game, and I'm not going to name the game because the game has a lot of promise. The theme behind it is cool. The core mechanics behind it are cool, but the card play in it is just frustrating because I was the odd man out. Basically, the other 2 players were able to do something and manipulate and influence the game, and I didn't do anything the entire game. And it was because of one small change. You just have to change one little thing, and the whole game would be tweaked and it would work just fine. It was just frustrating to play. And I didn't hold that against the game. It was something I offered feedback about. But playing it, for me, was frustrating. So, and of course, you don't want to have that in a game. You never want to have that. So hopefully with the changes that will be made to it, it'll fix that and balance itself out, because the core theme and the core mechanic of the game is super cool. It's just making it work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I will say on a slightly positive note that, and we'll talk about Unpub 6 later, but if you're going to Unpub 6, Blood of an Englishman will be there.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Cool. So
super cool. So after I left Jersey, and again, I'd like to thank Chris and Suzanne for the amazing hospitality. Really looking forward to next year. Perhaps it might not be in New Jersey. Might be somewhere else. But we'll see.
My house. My house will be big enough.
It's true. That's very true. We'll have it in Dover, Delaware.
Yeah.
So after I left, I kind of drove down south and maybe made a stop in Dover.
See? Told you my house is big enough.
No, I had pretty much, you know, I had a week-long sleepover in Dover with Daryl. And what did we do, Daryl?
Spooned.
We spooned.
Oh, my gosh.
I make myself laugh.
He says it, but it's true.
It's very true. We played Fate of the Elder God more times than I could possibly count. At least 5 times a day. At least.
Oh, at least. Yeah.
That's a lot.
We played 2-player, 3-player, 4-player. We played 2-player a lot because mainly it was Chris and I, because I work from home. So I was able to, you know, do my laptop on the game table off to the side and still play. And it was actually kind of nice to be able to multitask and feel good. Like at the end, I was still very productive. I didn't miss anything with work. And then we're also producing and pushing Fate of the Elder God to a level that it's amazing. It's so good. I can't believe my name is going to be on this game. No, I'm dead serious. Like, it's that good. Like, tonight I'm looking at over the components and laying everything out, and I'm, you know, using the X-Acto knife to cut out the other board that I have, and I just stopped, and Les, like, what's wrong? Did you mess it up? I'm like, no, I can't believe this game is actually getting made. Because it's just amazing, and I'm so proud of it, and I've been proud of other stuff before, but this is like a whole new level.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I'm proud of all the stuff that Dice Hate Me Games has done in the past, and the things that I've worked on, and the things that I've helped develop and help push out there, but it's like, this is something different. We started, as soon as I got there on Sunday, it was like 10 o'clock at night, I got to your house on Sunday, and we just sat down and just started hashing things out.
Oh yeah, we just pulled out the virtual trash can, and we were like, this doesn't work, throw it out. This doesn't work, throw it out. Let's twist this.
Right.
And You know, I'm saying like we gutted it, but we didn't really because
no,
it was
no.
just streamlined. It's like, let's trim some fat. Let's move this to the side. Let's do this.
And then I stayed up till 4:30 in the morning, putting a whole bunch of stuff back in.
Yeah. Well, I was impressed because I'm on father's schedule, so I have to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to get the kids out to school and such. But I was up till that first Sunday night until 2:30 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have stayed up even longer because it was totally design brain was running.
Yeah.
And I had issues when I got back to bed and lay down. I'm like, I'm still thinking of ideas. I just need to shut up, close my mind, and just try to sleep.
That's why I couldn't. I had to get it all out. And yeah. when I finally did, I mean, you woke up to like a novel worth of stuff.
I did. And we tried every single one of those things.
Yeah. A lot of them made in. Some of it we just had to tweak, you know, like Elder God powers and things like that. But
yeah. Yeah. And I think that was the fun thing is we were able to play test all the gods, all the artifacts, all, you know, everything we were adding in, we were able to easily playtest and rebalance on the fly, even mid-game sometimes, and just to make sure that they worked. And, I gotta say, and this just came down today, that Chris did so much work helping Richard and myself out with this game that Richard and I are making him a co-designer on the game as well. Mm-hmm. So that should be a Longest Louder Kirkman joint. And, yeah, I think that's just going to strengthen the title because Chris is in love with Lovecraft.
Like, yeah.
Like, if you just mention anything, he'll correct you or just expand upon what you just said. And it's very obvious with everything that he threw at this game. I'm still relatively new to Lovecraft. I've been reading his works and trying to catch up. And compared to Lanius and Kirkman, like, I'm still kind of grasping, like, which monsters worship which god and which does this and that. But I'm getting there. My point is I just want the game engine to work and the game to flow. And it's kind of nice that I'm like, here's this idea. And Kirk is like, oh, yeah, that could totally be, you know, the Shoggoth. And the Shoggoth does this. Or and it just twists. And it's been so much fun. Yeah, and I'm not trying to make this sound like the Dice Hate Me commercial hour. But
well, technically, this is Fabled Nexus. So
well, that's true. Fabled Nexus. Well, regardless, I'm not trying to make this a giant commercial for Fate of the Elder Gods. It's just...
It's been a labor... I mean, not a labor. An absolute joy.
Oh, yeah.
To do. To have... To just... And the fact that we were able to take a whole week to do it, I'm so glad my spring break fell when it did.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the perfect time for development on this and to go in and see what worked and what doesn't. And even toward the end of the week, we added in something new that Richard suggested on a phone call that we had with him.
Yeah, it was weird because it was just like a throwaway suggestion. Like, oh, maybe, you know, the goat spawn can, you know, do this. And we're like, oh, yes.
And it was such a cool mechanic. We added it in like as another currency for, you know, cards. And so right now with some of the currencies in the game, in order to power certain artifacts or spells, you have to discard a cultist or you place investigators on someone or a location. Investigators being... In this game, the bad guys, in quotes, because, you know, you're playing the cultists and trying to awaken your elder god. But the third currency we can have now is curses. And it's pretty cool. I mean, we can spoil it a little bit, but it's like we're still tweaking it. So it could change a little bit. But essentially,
I don't think they're going to change that much.
Yeah, I think it's mostly balancing like what the negative effect of the curses are. But anyway, when you get a curse, the person to the right of you gets the card and they watch for the trigger. So when you do something in the game, like visit the museum or discard an artifact, then they say, oh ho, blam, your curse is activated and you know something bad happens to you.
That's kind of similar to like the Crossroads card kind of thing.
Right? A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a little bit, but there's not much decision making. It's as soon as you do something unbeknownst to you, that's when your bad luck, you know, the curse strikes you. And when we were playtesting it, I was having fun with Chris a little bit because he would do something. I'm like, oh, roll D6. And he's like, really? I'm like, no, I'm just messing with you.
You can all, and then I can just see people having a lot of fun with them going, like, are you sure you want to do that? Looking at the curse card, you know? And yeah,
case in point, I actually talked Chris into going to the museum without him knowing it. I was like, oh, if I were you, you know what I'd do. He was like, go to the museum. I'm like, oh, totally. That amulet
turning
right
into
there.
A social game.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think he forgot that he had a curse on him, but I'm sitting there just like, Get that amulet and discard it.
Yeah, but it totally made sense to do it because I was in deep doo doo with my elder sons, and if Leslie had gone to the streets of Arkham and thrown a bunch of investigators on me and raided my lodge, I would have been in trouble. So the amulet made perfect sense to me.
Yeah.
And but you were playing it up. That was good. You're learning. That's impressive. So anyway, Fate of the Elder Gods again. We'll have a lot more about this game over the next few months as we continue to develop it. We're at the stage right now where we're doing tweaks. We just even had a long email chain with Richard today about a couple of liberties I was taking with the mythos. You know, I was he stresses, and I'm the same way. Every writer or every person who comes to the mythos can bring something new to it based on what has come before. I mean, Fantasy Flight does it with Arkham Horror and Eldritch Horror. They have their own kind of takes on the mythos, and we can do the same thing. But I wanted to ask Richard's opinion about this one thing that I had done in the game, and he basically said, "Well, we can do it. But maybe we think about this," and I said, "Well, I'm just going to try something else." So anyway, the development portion of this has just been a lot of fun.
Agreed.
Yeah. So Jessica, you actually got to do something cool besides just play Raptor.
Yes, there was one thing that I wanted to be able to say that I had done, and that was that I had played a complete full game of Monopoly, which
whoa,
I did
whoa,
recently.
Whoa, 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 whoa. No, not that. Chris said you did something cool.
Okay. But it was a lot of fun. At PressCon, I ended up, at the auction, I ended up buying basically a brand new Intrinc copy of the Here and Now World Edition of Monopoly.
Yes.
And so I took that to the house of one of my friends that I game with a lot, and we ended up playing a 5-player game. And it took forever.
Again, I just can't believe that 5-player Monopoly exists.
Yeah, and the copy that I had, it actually plays 6.
Yeah, which is crazy.
So,
that's
yeah,
just insane. People, don't play Monopoly with 6 players. I'm sorry. Just don't do it.
Yeah, it was really bad because it was hard to get a Monopoly, and that's what strung the game out for really long. So forever. I got pretty bored pretty early on.
Now, did you play with like the real traditional rules, or did you play with family rules?
Well, I've never actually really played Monopoly much, but I guess in the rules it doesn't say anything about trading properties, and
right.
They wanted to do that. And I'm kind of glad they did that because it sped the game up. My friend got mad at me because she wanted to trade me stuff, and I was like, nope. Give me $10 million if you want to change it. I was like, because she had so much money, and I was like, I'm not trading for anything more than something that's going to benefit me.
Yeah, see that.
And that kind of strung it out a little bit too, I guess.
Well, that's the thing is, like, you think that trading would speed the game up, but it really doesn't. It slows it down because then you got social negotiation, and when people get in trouble, they're like, oh, well, so and so's in trouble. You know what? You can't pay for this. I'll make you a deal. If you give me Reading Railroad. A Reading Railroad, then I will let you off the hook or whatever. And then you go, okay. And then it's like, and then it extends the game for hours. You know, if
yeah,
you play
it took us about 5 hours, I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Four or five.
Yeah, see, that's just ridiculous. No game of Monopoly should last longer than 45 minutes, in my opinion.
The thing is, we were playing by the regular rules for at least the first hour and a half. And
well, that is just nuts. Because there's nothing to think about. Well, okay, I take that back. There's a little something to think about Monopoly. But basically, you roll the dice. If you land on a property, you buy it. I don't care what it is. Just buy it. And then when it's your turn again, you roll again. Oh, I landed in Just Visiting. Okay, I roll again. I'm done on this line. Oh, I landed on property. Buy it. You know, because it's like, you got. If you pass on buying a property, there's something wrong. Unless you're broke. If you're broke, then you can't do it.
We only had one auction. Because everyone was buying stuff.
Yeah, and that'll happen sometimes. When you land on a property, you can't buy it. It goes up for auction. And that's actually a rule that a lot of people don't play with. Some people will play family rules, and they'll just say, they'll land on it, and they'll go like, well, I don't want to buy this. And so it just sits there. They don't do an auction. You have to wait until somebody else lands on it. Now, that makes Monopoly last like 10 hours. So, anyway.
I'm
glad you got to play.
That's off my bucket list.
And you got the cool little like debit cards and stuff, right?
Yeah, there's a little electronic banking unit, and then each card, they have like this little bump on the front, which kind of it individualizes the cards.
Right.
So it knows which card is in there. And it made some transactions quick, but some took forever, like ones where we had to give $100,000 to this one person. And so you had to put a card in, you know, it had to do a little, make little noises and then show you the bounces. Then you pull the card out and then put the next one in. So sometimes it took forever, but at least I didn't have to deal with it. We had one person being the banker taking care of everything.
Well, what was cool, we were talking about, actually, we talked about this last podcast, but anyway, the little tokens that come with it are cool. Like, there's a little Chinese dragon, there's a Mayan mask.
Yeah, it comes with a million different pieces that you can just choose from that are from different areas of the world, since it's the World Edition. So yeah. I played with the little German pretzel.
The pretzel. I think that's hilarious that it's a German pretzel. Yeah, all right. Well, so there you go. Cross it off your bucket list. Do you think you'll play it again?
I will, just because one of the friends, they love it. So we'll just play Terra Mystica one night and then play Monopoly another night, probably.
That is quite the mix right there. So anything else you played you want to get out of your system before we move on?
And just one more that I'd like to mention is this little card game that I picked up while I was at PressCon, and that's Six Nymphs.
Yeah,
and Chris, you haven't played this?
Oh, no, I've played it. Yeah. This is a pretty big con staple. Like, you'll see people breaking it out late at night. And so when you go to Origins, I'm sure you'll see it a lot.
Okay. Yeah, I love these little card games where this game's just a hand management game and you're trying to collect as few cards as possible by placing them out. But I love these. I have a feeling I'm going to have a large collection of these small little card games because I just love them.
Well, they're great. And you can always just throw them in a bag or take them out, you know, when you go out with people or go to somebody's house. It's the whole purpose behind having the rabbits is being able to put something in your pocket and take them out.
Yeah.
And yeah, Six Nymph is a classic as far as, like, you know, small card games go. It's very flexible.
Yeah.
And also, it's sometimes frustrating.
Yeah, I'm pretty bad at it, but I still have fun playing it. I like, it's games like those that make me, like, have to play again to see if I can improve myself. You know, it's a challenge, and I just want to improve just on myself, not necessarily beat other people, but at least do better than I did the last time by realizing what a good strategy is and trying to play it, so.
Yeah, there's I mean, we'll introduce you to some other smaller card games. You played No Thanks, right? We played No Thanks.
That was one of the first games I played with you.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I love that game. That game is just one of the best designs ever.
See, and games like that are hard for me because I tend to press my luck a little bit too much, thinking that, you know, somebody's going to push it a little bit more, and I always guess wrong.
Right.
So.
Well, and didn't they, Daryl, they just re-implemented Six Nymph as the Walking Dead card game, right?
Yeah. And that's really? One thing. Yeah. And that's one thing I was going to touch on is the new version. I guess that the beta is now rolled out for the game pages for Board Game Geek has this really cool thing where it'll tell you that if it's based on another game where they just re-implemented the game with a different theme. And so I looked up Six Nymph when you mentioned it yesterday, and it said other games that use this mechanic or the Six Nymph build, and the Walking Dead card game was one. And I was like, ooh. Now, see, that could be something I could jump into because bulls just aren't really pulling me into, I must get this. But I just, when I saw The Walking Dead, I was like, ooh, okay, I can understand how that's going to work because most likely getting zombies or getting bites is going to be the bad thing. So
okay. That would be cool. I'd probably pick that up.
Yeah. It looks cool. So I'm all for reskinning classic stuff to make more money, obviously, but also to have a wider audience, especially, I mean, card games are so simple to re-implement. And again, we've got several we'll show you in the future, especially at a con. Stick around. Mm-hmm. You played one more thing. You want to touch on that?
Sure.
We disagree with you on this, but go ahead.
Oh, well, I played 8-Minute Empire Legends.
And you didn't like it?
No, I didn't not like it.
Sounds like TC.
I was not very good at it. And some games, it's like immediately, even if I sucked at it, I still love it. And this one's like, I need to play it one more time to see if I like it or not. I don't know. I just had a really hard time spreading out in order to gain any control over any area. So, but that's just probably just me not knowing how to do it and not having a very good strategy. But so I'll give it another chance, but I didn't love it.
I do love
that card drafting mechanism, though, that it has just like through the ages.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
and the art was pretty cool.
Oh, the art's fantastic. Well, Ryan's a great artist. It's by Ryan Lockett at Red Raven Games, and he's a great artist. But I think that when 8-Minute Empires first came out, I backed it immediately. And I had a lot of fun with the game. And then, for some reason, when 8-Minute Empire Legends came out, I missed the Kickstarter. I don't know how I did, because I was like, I would totally backed. I backed everything Red Raven has put out, with the exception of Artifacts Inc., but I picked that up at Gen Con. But I missed 8-Minute Empires Legends, and I'm still kicking myself to this day because I don't own it. But every time somebody breaks it out, I want to play because it's so good. And it implements, it basically takes 8-Minute Empires and makes it 10 times more awesome.
And legendary.
It makes it legendary. Thanks, Barney. And so it's a great little game. It's obviously not 8 minutes, but it's 15 minutes.
Why do they call it that?
Because it's fun. It's alliteration. It's what TC loves, right? He loves alliteration. No, 8-Minute Empire, it's like, I guess if you really know the game, you could play it in 8 minutes, but normally it takes like 15 to 20 minutes to play, but come on.
Yeah, it took us about 20.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's amazing for a little area control, variable player power card drafting type of game.
Yeah, I guess so.
I guess so.
No, I'd like to try it again.
All right. So we've talked about what we've been doing in the board gaming world. Let's move on to the meat of the podcast. Thanks for scatting, Daryl.
You're welcome.
That's great. Okay, so as we mentioned at the front of the podcast, this one is the one about the takeover, and it is called the takeover because Jessica is taking over, period.
Jessica's an alien.
She's an alien, right? Yep. It's an alien invasion, and uh-huh. Jessica's leading. She's like part of the invasion force, the lead scouts.
No.
Well, all right, Jessica, why don't you fill everyone in on what exactly happened and what is going to happen?
All right, so this all started when I got frustrated about how in the last episode I gave a bad explanation on how to play the game Last Spike. So I was really upset about it, so I texted Chris and asked him if he could do a kind of a feature Chris edit to fix the mistake that I made. And this led to me commenting that if I had been editing the podcast, I would just do it myself.
Which was another mistake.
Because that led to us deciding that I would learn to edit and end up taking over that responsibility, which I'm actually cool with because I love doing that kind of stuff. So I bought some better headphones, which I'm using now, so I can hear everything a little bit better, and a bigger hard drive for my computer so that I could do all this. But then a few days later, I got the idea that if I can learn how to edit a podcast, I could probably learn how to run a podcast on my own. And so this idea for a new podcast kind of just popped into my head, and I got all excited and wrote out an outline for a new show. So I ended up vague tweeting about this new creative venture that I was going to go on, and Chris tweeted back. So I emailed him my outline just so I could get some feedback from him and ask him if he wanted to use any of my ideas for this show. So that ended up in like a long afternoon texting session talking about the future of the state of games. And then I just mentioned that maybe a revamp of the show might be good and that we should maybe discuss it. But then the next thing I know, Chris has contacted Daryl and TC, and I don't even know what they talked about. And all of a sudden, now I'm taking over the show.
Yep. She made the classic mistake of giving me an idea, and I just couldn't wait. I couldn't help myself.
So the next thing I know, there's like a tweet saying, I'm taking over. I'm like, what?
I was playing
games that day, and next thing I looked down at my phone, I'm like, what happened?
But here's the thing, people. All right, you may think that might be kind of cruel or rude just to throw somebody that's been in board gaming for, what, eight months now?
Yeah, 8 or 9 months.
And who's been podcasting for 4 or 5, to just throw them in the deep end. But you know what? Not a problem, because we've already got like show notes for the next two shows. We've got the schedule planned out. Well, I thought it was through October, but she's informed me now that it's into next year.
Yeah.
That she's scheduled us for when we're actually going to podcast. So it's something that I've always wanted to have, is a little bit of structure. And I've always wanted to try to do it myself, but I just have so many things that I have to balance.
Yeah, you're really busy. You got a lot going on.
I am. So for you to take over the podcast and take some of that responsibility off my hands, I think is going to be great, because it will help us to get the podcast out faster and free me up to do more things and be more relaxed on the podcast. Not that I'm not always relaxed on the podcast. Can't you tell? Nobody cares.
Nope.
Oh, the banter is gone. The love is gone.
Yeah.
All right. So let's talk about. Yeah, Daryl's like, yeah. The reason that Daryl was very talkative the last time we recorded this podcast, and it was
because we're in person. It was different. Now it's just me in my very cold office all by myself. I don't have the arm of, you know, of permission around my shoulders saying, go, you can talk, go nuts.
Yeah, say something, Daryl.
Basically, Chris is the spy all the time. So Chris, yeah, contacted TC and I, didn't tell Jessica. We thought Jessica knew. And then all of a sudden, Jessica's like, WTF, guys?
Yeah, but she ran with it, so it's going to be awesome. So anyway,
yes, not a big deal.
Let's talk about what's going to be changing with the podcast. We didn't get rid of TC. Obviously, it's hyperbole, but we don't really need him for tonight's podcast. Anywho, one thing we're going to talk about, the consistency of the podcast. So we want to, as she's already done, set a regular recording schedule so we can make sure that we're coming out every 2 weeks. So far, so good. We have looked at the calendar. We've planned it out in advance, and I think it's going to be pretty cool. So every other Monday, hopefully, as long as things stay, you know, on task, Jessica will
except
be able
for this episode.
Except for this episode. We'll not be on Monday. But anyway, we had unforeseen problems. So every now, Monday or Tuesday. But we're going to try to stick to a Monday schedule. So that gives you all week, all you listeners a week to kind of catch up with the podcast. And if you don't catch up that week, then you got another week, and then we'll release one on the following Monday. We're going to try to keep the episodes to around 1 hour, maybe 1.5. I know we've said that in the past, but we're being honest about that. We really want to do that. And one thing we're going to do it is by making sure that the show notes are structured in a certain way. We also will learn to cut ourselves off and limit basically the window of things. And also some careful editing from Jessica will help to keep us down to about 1.5 hours.
Yeah, and this should be good for Chris Mosley, who we would like to thank because he ends up typing up all of our show notes. So this should be a little bit easier on him, not having to listen to a 3-hour show.
Yeah, he's already having to do that for the Geek All-Stars, and we're not planning on getting any shorter over there. Dan and I were talking about the other day, and we're like, should we shorten the podcast? And we both went, nah. Because I think people who listen to Geek All-Stars just know we're going to ramble forever. The last podcast that came out was actually fairly short, but that's because we did an interview. So
yeah, it's just dulcet tones. That's why it's easy to listen to that for so long.
It is. I guess I mess it up. So
no.
Okay, that's good. I'm a good contrast to his dulcet.
Well, he starts to hypnotize you, and then you come in and kind of bring us
wake
back.
You up. Yeah, I wake you up. Okay, with my screeching voice. So another thing that we're going to do that we were restructuring is we really want to have more listener interaction. And you guys out there have been really great as far as like talking to us, but we want even more. So we've made it super easy. There are several ways you can contact us. First of all, we now have a Twitter handle for the podcast. It's been, 5 years? Yeah, why not? Yeah. So you can contact @TheStateOfGames to talk to us directly on Twitter. Jessica will be behind the scenes on that. And if the State of Games tweets at you about, ooh, I want that game, that's Jessica. not realizing she's tweeting from the State of Games.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's been really, really hard to manage both accounts on my phone. You have to go through an extra step to double check which person you're tweeting at. So I've been going back and forth, but I think I finally have a handle on it.
Yeah, it's fine. It takes a little time to manage multiple accounts. And so, you know, I'll, of course, still have my Dice Hate Me account. I'll be tweeting about games and when the State of Games comes out. But if you want to speak directly about something on the podcast or something you'd like for us to cover on the podcast, just tweet directly @TheStateOfGames. We'll see it. It's going to be awesome. It's a great place to go. We also now have a new email directly for the State of Games. So if you want to contact us on Gmail, it's thestateofgames@gmail.com. And you can send an email straight to the podcast, and we'll see it. We're going to send anything, questions about games you'd like to see us cover, or questions about conventions, or even inside baseball stuff for me and TC and Daryl. You know, anything you want to do, send it to that email address, and we're going to have periodically, every few episodes, a mailbag.
Yeah, we really want to do that. We really want to hear from you guys, because the show is for you. It's not for us just to banter and have fun, which I do enjoy, but... We're, you know, it's a service to you to talk about games, and I'm personally listen to a lot of podcasts and love having different ones to listen to and learn about all different kinds of things. So, but you know, so we want to provide what you want to hear. So we really want you guys to email or tweet us and just let us know what you want to hear. Any questions too, any questions about us, about games, gaming, anything.
And stay tuned because we will have some listener interaction contests going on in the future. Daryl's going to supply all the prizes for that.
Yep.
He doesn't know it yet.
It's all right. I got a big bowl here of wooden tokens. So if you win a prize, I'll just send you a random color. It'll just be one token to save on shipping, but maybe I'll initial it, and that way you'll be like, oh my god, I got a DL token.
We also will have 8x10 glossies signed by TC.
Oh, of course.
And those are going to be great.
You'll have to supply your own frame, but make sure it's gold and gaudy.
Gaudy. Yeah, that's perfect. But anyway, we are going to have many more contests, much more incentive to both interact. Also, you can go to the Guild on Board Game Geek. Join Guild 1903. We've had some great discussion in there recently. The last podcast post on BGG actually had a lot of people discussing, you know, different things that happened at PressCon. So come on by, interact with us, talk with us, let us know what you think. So what possible additions could we go into? Daryl, you had an idea.
So
something we could do besides just the podcast itself, something that's something that we could add on, do something extra.
I think we should have Chris Mosley on and actually have him live, you know, more or less, you know, stenograph, like do a live notes of the show as it's going on. He's not allowed to talk at all. He can maybe grunt and give a, you know, agreeable
right,
but that's about it. But I want like a transcript of the whole show done live,
and that would be amazing. We'll ask him to read that back to us.
It'll be the only show where we'll allow this.
That's all you'll hear the entire show.
That's it.
Just a bunch of typing
down. Chris, by the keyboard. Chris, stop.
You might actually like that.
Chris now has to say 5 minutes. Daryl talks about me and won't shut up.
Yeah, exactly.
Why oh why is Daryl talking in this episode? I hate the new format.
Well, you also had an idea about vidcasts, right? I mean, Jessica, it spawned from something you had mentioned, but something we'd done before.
Yeah, I was wondering if while we're Skyping, you know, if we could see each other through video so that we could kind of, you know, indicate if we wanted to interject and kind of be able to interact that way. But then Daryl had the suggestion that maybe we should do some vidcasts.
Yeah, I think it'd be awesome to do maybe once every other month, or and we could break that schedule whenever there's a big event going on or if we're all together at a convention.
Yeah.
And it would be scheduled in advance, and that way we can get live Q&A from everybody. And if we're an event, that makes it even cooler because, you know, we're going to be juggling, is the internet connection going to be good, with also people asking us questions that aren't there. And maybe we can then bring in live special guests and whatnot. And I think it'd be a fun little twist. It's kind of like back in the day, Chris and I were on a video cast called The Board Rumors.
Yep.
And it was all board game industry people. So we had reviewers, we had publishers, we had designers. And we just kind of talked about random topics. And it was spitfires, kind of like Around the Horn on ESPN. And I think just doing something like that where we're talking about hot topics, but then having guests on that you don't only get to hear, but you can also see their lovely faces. And it just makes them being on the show that much more special and awesome. But I mean, with that said, the shows would also then be released on audio for the podcast after the fact. So we'd still be covering our bases and still making sure our loyal listeners, all eight of them, are able to hear the podcast wherever they're at.
Yeah, and that'll be something that we can probably roll out quarterly, like maybe do one a quarter, just as something special. It might be nice if we can try to do something like that at a convention, which would be fun. And maybe we can do it, you know, via Google Hangouts, or we could even do an actual live recording of something and have video there. We'll just upload both. But anyway, these are all ideas we'd like to try out. The other thing that we had an idea for was minisodes, which Daryl and I were going to actually do if we didn't record this week, since we were in person. You know, whenever we have something small we'd want to talk about, you know, like for instance with me and Daryl, you know, development on Fate of the Elder Gods or playtesting or things like that. And So we might try to roll those out in between episodes or long stretches, or after we've had a particularly longer episode, we could do something small on the side and just kind of pepper those in, you know, little things here and there. So if you have ideas about those mini-sodes or little topics that you might like to listen to outside of the main podcast, we'd love to get your feedback and let us know what you'd like to do for that.
Yeah, with that, I was thinking, since I'm kind of a baby gamer, I would kind of do a little something from my perspective as a new gamer or something like that, you know?
Yeah, and that's what one of the benefits of having you on the podcast is, like, you know, when it's just me and TC and Daryl, we're very inside baseball. We're talking a lot of in-depth stuff. I mean, we've been gamers for a very long time. But we're also game designers and publishers and everything else. So it's nice to have that perspective. And with you actually taking over the reins of the podcast for the most part, it's going to enable us to have that fresh perspective that we need to maintain without us going, like you said, when you first started listening to us, you were like, oh, what are they talking about?
Yeah, it was like a foreign language. I didn't understand anything you guys were talking about.
work replacement. You know, no, it didn't even get, I got a little bit of a huff. I heard a little bit of a huff. But that was about it.
That's why we need to be on video so we can see each other. And you could have laughed at the face that I just gave.
I heard the huff. I heard the huff. So I was imagining it in my head. Exactly. All right. So, well, that's basically what we have planned for the podcast. We want to let everybody know so you can go out and tell everybody and come in and join at The State of Games on Twitter. Email us at thestateofgames@gmail.com. And, of course, join the Guild of BGG, which is 1903. And then, of course, we'll be having some contests in the next month or so with all of those great things for all of our listeners. We love you all. We think we've had listeners that have been with this podcast since day one, but we have every day, every other day, somebody says, oh, I've discovered The State of Games, or I like what you guys are doing here. And that's just great. We love to evangelize and have everything that you all want to hear out there. So keep interacting with us and let us know. Well, anything else before we move on to the backside?
I think we're good.
No, we're good. Good luck to us on the future episodes.
This yes. is going to be a bear for me to edit.
Yes.
Have fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great. This is your baptism by fire for sure. All right, well, let's wrap this thing up. Notable Kickstarters. I know, Jessica, you had one you'd like to promote.
Yeah, I was perusing the Kickstarter site and came across this little card game, which I actually don't know how it plays, but as soon as I saw the cards, I just thought it was so cute. I had to mention it because it's adorable. But the game is called Lil Cthulhu and is being published by D-Evolution Studios. It's a card game where the cultists kind of have to appease crying little baby Cthulhu by kind of building up toys or something to appease him. But it's so cute. There's this one card that comes out, and that's when the cultists have to deal with them. But it's a little baby Cthulhu in a safety pin diaper, and he's got tears streaming out. He's crying, and it's just so stinking adorable.
It looks ridiculously adorable, that's for sure. I don't know how it plays, though.
No.
But it's going to be, like, the chibi Cthulhu fans are going to just go nuts over this thing.
Pretty cute.
Yeah. What's it at right now? Do you know?
I don't know. I know that last time I looked, it hadn't funded yet, but it still had a ways to go. It doesn't end until March 31st.
Right. 10 days to go, and it looks like they need about $2,000 more to reach their funding goal. It's called the quirky and evil card game about losing sanity that you can't win, mostly.
Yeah.
Little Cthulhu, you thought his dad was bad. That's kind of funny, actually.
he's like Kylo Ren, just those temper tantrums.
Yep.
Yes.
That was actually pretty good. It sounded like one of those things in Hearthstone.
The Murlocs.
Murlocs. Yeah, that's what it sounded like. A Murloc. All right, so go check that out, Little Cthulhu on Kickstarter. Is there anything else we need to mention about Kickstarter?
It's still there.
It is still there.
Nothing I can think of.
Okay, well, I mean,
Kind of a quiet Kickstarter time right now.
It is. Weird. It's weird. It is odd. I mean, I'm sure half the people out there listening that have Kickstarter projects are going like, no, mention my project. But I can't. Actually, one that I had in mind to mention was canceled and is going to be postponed for later. So, yeah, most of the Kickstarters that I was backing or following ended last week. So it's a little bit of a lull right now, which is good because you know what? Come April 1st, there's not going to be a lull. Yes. There's going to be metagames. So we're going to do our second annual April 1st, April Fool's Day Meta Rabbits Kickstarter for Dice Hate Me Games. And it's going to last 72 hours like last time. And we have three wonderful selections for you. These are all games, well, with the save of one, but two of the games that we're going to be presenting of the three were actually winners of the Meta Rabbits contest that was launched from Greater Than Games and Dice Hate Me Games. The first game on the docket is the one that we've had in mind for a while, and it's designed by Christopher Bedell and Peter Hayward, and is called Traitor Mechanic, the Traitor Mechanic game. And it's you're all mechanics in a garage, but one of you are working for the competition, and you're sabotaging the jobs, trying to make sure that the cars don't get fixed right, so you lose money because you're having to pay the customers back. So it is a you're a traitor mechanic. You're a mechanic that's a traitor, and it's a traitor mechanic game. You get it?
I get it.
Okay,
I get it.
Okay,
I love these.
So
puns.
Good. I gotta wonder, and you may not have this nailed down yet, but last year the funding goal was the date of the launch. Do you know if it's going to be the same this year?
Probably.
Nice.
Probably.
I mean, last year was an arbitrary number for the goal. I don't know what that was. It was just arbitrary number.
Totally arbitrary.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we won't worry about that right now. We'll figure all that out within the next, like, week and a half. So.
Week?
Yeah, week. Exactly. In addition to Traitor Mechanic, the Traitor Mechanic game, we also have Trick Taking, the Trick Taking game, which is... Yes, you are all. This is by Bob West and Tovarich Pizan, and you are all the world's greatest magicians have gathered together and are trying to one up each other to become basically the world's greatest magician. So you are actually trick taking in a trick taking game. Get it? You're magicians. You're doing tricks. You're taking those tricks. You get it. Okay.
So you're being Chris Angel and just stealing stuff.
Right.
David Blaine.
What's cool about this is it's a new twist on trick-taking. I mean, there have been a couple of games that do this type of mechanic a little bit, like Chronicle, a couple of other games. But this is super cool because all of it's very thematic to magicians. So when you play a card, you're trying to not only win the suit, but you also have to, if you match the effect, and you have either high card wins or low card wins depending on what was led, and you can play games like cards like Metamorphosis, which actually flips the top hat, which changed the game state from high card wins to low card wins, or vice versa. You can play like cards like Vanish that allow you to send cards back to opponents' hands, and you all play throughout the game and build a repertoire of tricks, and then you make a 7-card hand for the final trick, which none of you know is going to be the lead card for, and then you play out the final round, and then the winner of that is the world's greatest magician. I really enjoyed it. I have a lot of fun with it. And the art is being done by Jackie Davis, who, of course, is fantastic. It's going to be a really nice package.
So. I'm excited for that because, like I said, I love trick-taking games, and I love magic, too, so that I'm excited for that.
I think you'll really like it. I'm a fan of both of those things as well, and so this one really stood out to me as a really fun game. The third one we're going to have is Time Management, the Time Management game from Nat Levan, and basically you're working for a time management agency trying to manage your time well by rearranging the cubicles in the time management agency to make sure that the timeline is saved. So you're saving time by saving time. So there you go. It's kind of a thinky puzzler. It's not horribly heavy. We've been actually working with Nat very extensively to make the game a little more approachable and a little faster playing. But at the same time, it's nice because you're trying to rearrange the differently colored cubicles, whether they're past, present, or future, in the grid or the matrix that's out on the office floor. And by doing that, you can complete contracts and gain time back, and whoever has saved the most time at the end of the game wins. So,
cool.
It's cool. It's a lot of fun. So those are our three that's coming to Kickstarter on April 1st. Make sure you set your calendars, set your alarm, whatever you need to do, because these will only be on there for 72 hours, and then they are gone.
Yeah.
So, we'll have more information about other Kickstarters that are coming up from the Dice Hate Me Games and Fabled Nexus Realms on the next podcast. Until then, Daryl, why don't you fill us in on Unpub News, because we're coming up on Unpub 6 quickly.
Yeah, Unpub 6 is going to be April 9th and 10th at the Baltimore Convention Center in beautiful Inner Harbor, Baltimore, Maryland. And come and play test over 200 games. It's absolutely free. I can't stress that enough. It's absolutely free to come and play. You come play some of the prototypes that these designers have been working tirelessly on since last year. And even some brand new titles and such. And you give your feedback, and your feedback goes into a raffle, and then you end up winning brand new games that are, you know, published and out already that have been donated from publishers. So you come to this convention, you spend nothing, you play games, which everyone likes to do, and you give some feedback to help make that game better. So when it comes out on a shelf, you could be like, hey, I helped make that game get to where it's at right now. And then you potentially get to leave with free board games that you would have probably bought at a game store anyway, but you get them for free because you just came and played games. It's crazy.
We're so meta. That.
So yeah, that's it. I mean, that's Unpub. It's just come, have fun, play games. It's with peers. We have special guests, Rob Davio and Eric Lang, coming in this year. Richard Lanius is coming back from last year because he had such a great time. We're expecting about 2,000 people. So if you come, you know, come early and come ready to play, because odds are at some point it's going to break down to standing room only or waiting for games to open up so you can jump in and play. Last year, it was insane and
it was
very
nuts.
Intense, but it was a blast. It was so much fun. And so this year we moved to a much larger space. We have far more tables. We're going to have, I think it's 217 different games at... Wow.
That is crazy.
120 designers, and it's just, everything's going to go, man. It's just going to be play, 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 play. We actually have an official vendor hall this year with some of our great sponsors like Ad Magic and Panda, who are the main sponsors of the entire show. Hasbro is going to be there, Mayday, Renegade, Dice Hate Me Games. The list can just go on. Red Raven's going to be there for the first time, so it's going to be great to meet Ryan. It's just going to be fun. Just come and play board games. That's it. That's the whole crux of the show. That's no strings attached.
Not only play games, but you get to craft those games. So all of your feedback is taken into account by the designers. So you might come and play a game, and then like a year, year and a half later, you see it on the market. Or you might play it again, and it's done. It's published or something like that. You're like, hey, I had a hand in that. You might even play the game and go like, hey, I made that suggestion. You know, these things happen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. On Twitter, I follow a lot of people that are game designers, and it's cool to hear them like, oh gosh, I got to get this ready for Unpub. It's coming up soon. And so I'm hearing about all these games that are coming. I'm like, there are too many games. How am I going to get to play all of these?
Yeah, unfortunately, you won't be able to. And last year, you know, like, okay, so Unpub 4, I played a ton. I was like, I'm going to play so many different games. And then last year, I was like, man, what did I get to play? And I played some good stuff, but it was like cut in half because there's only so many you can get around to, and there's so many games there. But then I have to ask myself, like last year, Richard Lanius played like every game there, it seemed, because everybody was like, oh, Richard came and played my game, gave me feedback. Or Richard came and played my game, gave me feedback. I'm like, he's played like 50 games. How in the world does that happen? Does he have clones? I don't know. It was odd. So I'm going to set myself down for like a priority list of games that I want to try to check out. And there's always a few surprises that I come across and that's one of the reasons why I love Unpub.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, like I said, Richard's going to be there again. He's going to take some time to show off Fate of the Elder Gods, but he did say the majority of his time will be spent playtesting games because that's what he likes to do and that's what he's coming to do.
Absolutely. So after hours, if you'd like to test out Fate of the Elder Gods, let us know because we'll have it there.
Yep.
It's going to be cool. All right. So let's wrap this puppy up. So we're right a little bit over an hour. And by the time Jessica gets done editing all of our nonsense out, we'll probably be down to about an hour. So that's it for this episode of the State of Games. Tune in next time when we'll be discussing how to be an effective playtester right before the weekend of Unpub 6. And
yeah.
TC will be back with us for that, which is going to be great because when it comes to playtesting, he's the master. So we also really want to hear from you and provide content that you want to hear. So please send us ideas for show topics you'd like for us to cover and new segments you'd like to hear. And like we mentioned before, you can email your ideas to thestateofgames@gmail.com. And of course, now you can tweet them at The State of Games on Twitter. You can also go to DiceHateMe.com and comment on the podcast, or join Guild 1903 on BoardGameGeek.com. So many ways that you can find us and talk to us.
Please do.
Yeah, there's no excuse for you being silent. That's just rude.
That's right. And, of course, since TC is not here, we will mention that he has a lecture this week at in West Virginia. Does anybody remember what college?
West Virginia at Bethany College.
Bethany College. So
it's about to howl to keep that bounce and sheen to his hair.
Just so he's driving all the way from where he lives down there to teach, or is it?
It's not that far.
Okay.
I mean, Pennsylvania's near West Virginia.
He's got his helicopter. He's fine.
He's got his private jet. Yeah. We'll just zoom in on to Bethany College. So we'll mention that for TC. Also mention that, of course, he has a design segment on the Perfect Information podcast. So check that out. You can also find him on Twitter at Puppy Shogun. You can hit me up on Twitter at Dice Hate Me. What about you two?
You can find me on Twitter at Get Louder. And look up more information on Unpub and Unpub 6 at unpub.net.
And you can find me on Twitter at JJAYESS1 or at the State of Games Twitter handle at the State of Games.
Yes, no matter what you see the State of Games tweeting at you, it's Jessica, it's not me.
Well, maybe I'll give you guys the password.
Only going to confuse everybody.
Well, you put J. We all have
true.
First initials, so J, C, D, and T.
Hey, that's a great idea. See, another thing from the House of Ideas. This is the greatest.
Just copying it from Rolling Dice and taking names.
Oh, Marty, no. Marty and that's all we need is give credit for something we're doing to Marty and Tony. Love you, Marty and Tony. If you still listen to the podcast, and if you don't, shame on you. Anyway. We've enjoyed talking at you. We want to talk with you and listen to you, so contact us. And until next time, this is Dice Hate Me.
This is Get Louder.
And this is JJS1.
Saying thanks for listening. And may all your rolls be sixes.